Louise McSherry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.
Now though, it is time for us to go to our next guest. And with days rolling into weeks and expected months, the social isolation malarkey is tough going. There's no doubt about that. And here to give us some perspective, our next guest has been in a self-isolated state since January, having been diagnosed with polycystic kidney disease 10 years ago. Karen Moynihan had a kidney transplant in January and has been inside basically since being discharged from hospital. So Karen, first, congratulations. And secondly, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. So I've been following this because I followed you on Twitter for a while. Can you give us a little bit of a background, though, on how it is that you came to have a kidney transplant?
Sure. Well, as you say, it was diagnosed about 10 years ago that I had this kidney condition. It's the same one that my dad had. So he had a transplant about 11 years ago. So in a way, it wasn't totally unfamiliar territory having to phase into a kidney transplant, which is kind of nice. So about 2 years ago, we kind of like went in an appointment with my consultant. We kind of realized how low my kidney function had gotten and that it was actually time to start considering either maybe looking into dialysis or, you know, just that it was going to be kind of soon down the line at that stage, or maybe time to start thinking about getting a transplant preemptively so I could avoid dialysis. So we kind of started moving ahead with that in 2018, and it took about a year then to actually get referred to Beaumont, where all the transplants take place, and to get on the transplant list.
And how were you, like, in terms of day-to-day, like, was it having a huge effect on your life?
The main thing for me, really, was the chronic fatigue. That was my major symptom. So I was just really, really tired all the time. So really all I could do for the last 2 years was pretty much stay home, unfortunately.
Okay. That's tough.
So I was pretty limited in what I could do kind of day to day. I was working from home, though, which was great. I'm self-employed, and that kind of worked out nicely in terms of timing for me, that I could just kind of work my own hours and I wouldn't have to commute in and out every day to an office, because, yeah, that just would have been way too much for me at the time.
So you were obviously, I mean, that's like, we're kind of laughing about it, but that's a huge thing to kind of be so tired that you can't really live your life beyond your home, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's funny, it kind of happened so gradually. I nearly didn't really notice how bad it had gotten until, like, I'd just be kind of lying there on the couch after, like, walking 10 minutes to the shop and back, and I'd just be complaining to my boyfriend, like, why am I so tired? And he'd be like, because you need a new kidney. So you know, it's just one of those things, and it just, like, when it creeps in so gradually, you kind of don't really notice until it gets to the point where you're just so wrecked you can't even think about going out. It's just like, oh God.
I can actually kind of relate to that, because I was really sick for a long time before I was diagnosed with cancer. I had a full year of going to the doctor, and over that year I was still going to work, but I was getting sicker and sicker and sicker and sicker, and by the kind of time I was diagnosed, I really had no energy at all. But I thought I was fine. My husband was like, no, you are not fine. You are in bits. Like, you can't do anything. Like, you come home from work and that's it. That's your all your energy is spent. But I totally get that. At the time, I didn't. I guess it's because it is a gradual thing.
That's it. It's only when you take a step back, you kind of go, oh, wow, I really wasn't that well at all.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, you did eventually get into Beaumont, and a transplant became a prospect for you. But how quickly did you know where you were going to get your kidney from?
Well, this is the thing, I suppose, all along, and we've kind of been joking about it over the years, but my mom and my brother had both always kind of said that they'd be going, they'd go for, to put themselves forward, basically, when the time came. And we did used to joke about it a bit, where, like my mom is very fit anyway and would always take care of herself. And she'd be like, oh, I'm keeping this kidney in good shape for you.
Yeah.
And in fairness to her, she absolutely did and did a great job.
I wonder, like, was that a joke, or do you think she really had that in her mind?
I think she really did. Like, we kind of say it's messing, but she really did, as it turns out. So once I actually got on the list, it's only at that point you can actually start, or that family members can start putting themselves forward to see if they'd be a match.
Right.
So we actually had to wait until then before we'd actually know whether this was even a possibility. So once we kind of started the testing, and then it turned out that my mom actually was the right blood type, tissue type. She kind of hit all the markers she needed to, which was great. So that was probably May last year when I got on the list and we started the whole testing process. It took under a year, I suppose, all told, between getting you know, starting the process and actually getting my transplant. It just felt like it took about 2 years, because when you're in the middle of it, you know, and it's like, we'll wait 3 weeks for this result, and then you get one result, and it's like, now we just have to wait another 3 weeks for this other thing. And you're kind of living life in 3 weeks at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Waiting to hear results. And it's quite stressful.
Yeah, because I think one of the things that people are struggling with at the moment is not being able to make plans, because we just don't know how the next, obviously, months and really, I mean, we don't know how the next year is going to be as we phase back to somewhat normality. But you presumably couldn't make plans or think beyond the next test result for that entire time.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, it really was just like, we'll just have to wait and see. And we really didn't make any plans. I mean, I did manage to go to All Together Now last year, and looking back now, I'm like, how did I do that? So, you know, there were small kind of things that you kind of put in the diary and think, well, we'll see how we go, and you know, not be too sold on any one particular idea, but just, you just have to take it as a game, really. Yeah.
I went to Electric Picnic the weekend after I was diagnosed with cancer.
Oh, like, my goodness.
Yeah, it was insane. But it was in my head. I was like, no, I have to do this. And I just made it. It was a terrible idea. I did not have a good time. But it was like a mental thing that I just had to force myself to do, I guess. Did you have a good time at All Together Now?
I did. It turned out, you see, my brother actually lives quite close by, so I was able to kind of escape back to his house pretty regularly as it happened. So I kind of go for maybe an hour or two and then go, I'm done now. Go back to my brother's house.
That's enough.
It worked out kind of well.
Yeah, good. So then anyway, test after test happened, and eventually it became clear that your mother was going to be your donor, right? And so then how was that? What did it feel like? I mean, obviously you said this had been a conversation in your life for a long time, but the reality of knowing that, you know, it's a big thing that your mom was going to give you one of her internal organs. I mean, there's no small way to say that.
True. Yeah, no, it's pretty huge. It was really weird. I'm not going to lie. Like, it's quite a weird headspace to be in. And in fairness, like, my mom and my brother, they were so enthusiastic about coming forward. Like, they were way more excited about it than I was. I was just like, I don't know how to feel about this, to be honest, because I suppose the fact that someone you love so much is going to have to go through surgery because of you is kind of daunting. But then the fact that they want to do it for you, you kind of just have to accept the gift, you know, don't fight it.
Yeah. It is hard because I think Irish people, we're not great at kind of asking for help or accepting gifts or even accepting compliments. So I can only imagine what a mind feck that must have been.
A little bit, yeah.
So then when it came time for you to have your surgery, how did you feel in the run-up to it?
It was really weird, actually, because I suppose we'd kind of hit a couple of delays in the process that for a while it nearly felt like it was happening to somebody else. And it was like, I've been kind of, you know, it had been about 2 years of kind of, you know, being quite stressed about it at first. And then it was just like, you know, this will happen at some point. And I kind of didn't ever really think this is definitely going to happen, and it's going to happen at this point. And it was kind of out of self-preservation, really, that I was just like, you know what, unless I'm actually in hospital, I'm just not going to think about it too much or like stress too much about it if I can. But yeah, it was very strange. It kind of, I suppose it felt like it was all taking so long, and at the end it all happened quite quickly. Because we've gotten so used to kind of sticking another 2 or 3 weeks onto any date we've been given, you know, in terms of results, that it was actually before Christmas we'd gone in for kind of final blood checks. And the coordinator in Beaumont was like, if, you know, all going well, we could get this done by the end of January. And we were kind of like, okay, so maybe March, best case scenario, in our heads, like not really thinking that was actually going to be the case.
Yeah.
But it kind of happened so quickly in the end, I nearly didn't have time to overthink it. And, you know, I was kind of busy trying to wrap up work as well at the same time. So, and it was just as well I was busy, because I didn't let myself get too freaked out about it, which was good, because I'd never even spent a night in the hospital before, let alone a full week, you know.
So going into your actual surgery, what were the concerns? So you knew that you had a good kidney coming from your mom. You knew your mom wasn't going anywhere, so I presume you didn't need to worry about that. But what did you need to worry about?
I suppose it was just the kind of the fear of the unknown slightly, in that I hadn't ever been in hospital really before, not for anything serious like this. So I suppose when we actually arrived into Beaumont, like the day before, I was pretty nervous, and like the nurses that were like kind of checking me in and checking blood pressure and stuff were like, your heart rate is going 90. Yeah. I was like, yeah.
You're like, I don't know if you know, I'm just about to have a kidney transplant.
I'm kind of nervous. We really. Yeah. But then again, like once you're there and you kind of get settled into your room, and I did just kind of calm down a bit then at that point, and it was like, look, it's happening and this is actually great. So yeah, it was a weird kind of like nervous excitement as well. But yeah, no, it was. And then of course the morning of, my mum had to go down kind of earlier on that morning. So there was a weird kind of couple hours where I was just sort of waiting for my turn to go down. And I was kind of dreading that part because I was just like, oh God, you know, mum's down in surgery and now I just have to wait until I get brought down and just hope everything goes well. But thankfully everything did go really, really well. So,
well, yeah, I mean, I can only imagine there's a lot of feelings going on there. Like if your parent was in surgery or anyone that you loved was having surgery, you would have a set of feelings attached to that on its own. And then you add to the fact that the surgery is for you, and then you've got your own surgery like immediately after. That's a lot of stuff for a human being to process at one time.
Yes, it certainly was. And in a way, it was actually probably worse, like for my brother and my dad and my partner, because they were the ones that actually had to wait out all those hours, you know, hoping that everything was going to go okay. Whereas for me, you know, I had that first kind of morning of, okay, waiting for my turn. But of course, once I went down, I was conked out then for 4 or 5 hours and didn't wake up until late that night, whereas they actually had to go through those few hours, you know, waiting to hear news.
And do you remember waking up?
I remember being woken up and like moved from like a trolley to the hospital bed, and then kind of coming back into the room. Like it's very fuzzy, but I vaguely kind of remember being kind of wheeled back into the room. And then I think Love Island was on that night, and I vaguely have some recollection of kind of half watching that in and out of sleep. But those first kind of 2 days right after are pretty fuzzy still.
Yeah, understandable. And when did you get to see your mom?
So I got to see her, it was probably the next morning, because I don't think I was really fit for anything. I couldn't even have a drink of water until I was a bit more alert kind of that Monday night, the day of the operation.
Yeah.
But obviously I knew like straight away, it was like, how's mom? Is she okay? Because it was like a form of sentence. But once I knew she was okay, then yeah, that was such just a massive relief, I suppose, that everything had gone well. But like you pretty much, they try and get you up and out of bed as soon as you possibly can. So even the day after, they kind of get you up just to move around a bit, because it's so important to make sure everything's working okay and that you're getting out and about, really. So I would have seen her then, of course, very regularly right after. We'd be taking little walks over and back to each other's rooms every day. It was kind of nice in a way that mom was there too, because even, you know, when people had all gone home or gone away for the night, it was still just the two of us kind of, you know,
absolutely
competing over our step counts up and down the hospital corridor.
Yeah, hospital can be pretty lonely, so I can completely understand that. So obviously, based on the chat that we're having now, things have all gone really well for you.
Yes.
So how are you feeling?
Really good. Like, I actually feel great. And this is the thing, I suppose, I was so tired for so long, whereas now I actually have all this energy, but I can't leave the house.
Yeah.
Which is a bit annoying.
So how long were you had to kind of stay in quarantine, as it were, or isolation anyway, for how long after your surgery?
Yeah. So, yes. So anyone that gets something like an organ transplant, once you get home, you're pretty much told, look, give up for about 8 to 12 weeks, just avoid crowds. Stay away from anybody who's not well, wash your hands regularly. If anyone's calling to the house, get them to use hand sanitizer. Mm-hmm. So you do need to give it about 8 to 12 weeks before you're kind of properly out and about again. So that's what I had been doing. And of course, by the time I got to my 8-week mark, where I was kind of thinking in my head, this is great, I'm going to get to go out and see people again.
Yeah.
Then it was time to get the stay at home order. So unfortunately, that's just the way it timed out for me.
Yeah. So how, I mean, are you a bit fed up?
I am getting a bit fed up at this stage now. I won't lie, at first it was kind of nice, just sitting at home and watching Netflix and reading books and, you know, not having to feel guilty because I was getting over a pretty big surgery.
Yeah.
But yeah, as the kind of the days have worn on now, and it's, you know, I suppose in a way it's kind of nice that everyone has to stay at home now, and it's not just me. So we're all kind of in it now together. But no, I won't lie, I am getting slightly antsy now at this stage. So I've gotten into baking, actually, which is very unlike me. So anyone that knows me is like, what's going on with you?
You're like, I am very bored.
Like, I have found something to occupy my time. I am making chocolate chip cookies for no reason.
Do you have any kind of suggestions, anything that you've learned from your extended quarantine that maybe you could pass on to the rest of us?
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I think keeping in touch with people is just massive. And something like even just picking a night to watch a movie and just have a WhatsApp group going at the same time, chatting to your friends about it.
Yeah.
It's like that kind of does make you feel like you're not just in a bubble completely. Like we had a couple of game nights with friends as well, where we just kind of asking quiz questions and stuff back and forth over Zoom, even silly things like that.
Yeah.
Just kind of make you feel like you still have some bit of a social life. I've gotten into a jigsaws in a pretty big way too. Mm-hmm. I would suggest getting into those, making without looking at the box.
Karen, we actually did an entire segment on the glamour of jigsaws last weekend on the show, so don't worry, you don't have to convince me.
You're well on top of it.
So obviously your donation came from within your family, but if no one in your family had been suitable, you would have had to go on the transplant list like anyone else. So I suppose I can imagine what you would want to say, but what would you like to say about organ donation?
Just how important it is to have that conversation really with your family. I mean, the way things are, even if you have an organ donor card, that's not like a anything binding. Like your family will still be the ones to make that call in a worst case scenario. So it's just so important to let people know that's what you'd like to have happen if the worst happens, and but just how important it is to have the conversation, you know, let you make sure your family know that this is something that you'd want to have happen, because it is just so important, and it's so amazing. Just organ donation in general, like, it's sci-fi to be honest that I have somebody else's kidney in me right now.
Like,
it's just such an amazing thing to be able to do for somebody. It's just, it's incredible.
And I know that the Irish Kidney Association has decided not to proceed with their Organ Donor Awareness Week, which was supposed to be last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, just this last week. It was meant to be, Organ Donor Awareness Week for, the Irish Kidney Association. So, unfortunately, that had to be postponed like any other kind of major charity events this year, unfortunately.
Yeah, but if people would like to make a donation, all you have to do is text KIDNEY to 50300. That's to donate €4. The Irish Kidney Association will receive a minimum of €360. So if you think about all the coffees you're not buying, you could throw one in the direction of the Irish Kidney Association. As I said, you just have to text KIDNEY to 50300, and that is provided by Like Charity. So Karen, look, I mean, I really hope that we all get back to normal life sometime soon, but I especially hope it for you, because you have been waiting for long enough. And thank you so much for sharing your story today. I think it's really valuable for people to hear the reality of things like transplants, so that they do know just how important organ donation would be. Because if you hadn't gotten a new kidney, what would your life have looked like?
Well, for my blood type, which is actually the most common one, it's O positive. It would have taken about 3 or 4 years of waiting on the list to actually get a kidney if I had to wait on for a deceased donor. So I would have been on dialysis by that point, definitely. And honestly, dialysis is no joke. I was weak after watching a PowerPoint about it, let alone actually having to do it. So I got very lucky in that I didn't have to go on dialysis. So it would have been a tough couple of years, I think, waiting. Yeah, definitely.
Okay. Well, look, thank you so much, Karen Moynihan. If people want to find you online, where can they find you?
I'm on Twitter at Red Lemonader. I'm on Instagram as Karen Moy. And I'm a freelance graphic designer, so I may as well throw up my website.
Absolutely.
KarenMoynihan.com.
And that's Karen, KarynYN.
That's right, yeah.
Karen, thank you so much.
No
Thanks
problem.
For coming on. Have a great day. Thank you.
Please.
There you go, KarenMoynihan.com for all your graphic design needs. Look, if you can't get a plug in here, where can you?
Louise McSherry. Weekends from 9 on 2FM.